Chapter 21. The Grand Elusa. The chamber's walls seemed to shake with the force of the voice. Rhea pressed against my side. I tried my hardest to see, but my second sight was useless in such total darkness. For an instant, I considered breaking the promise made at Caer Mirthin and tapping whatever powers I might still possess to protect us, however I could. But the very thought rekindled all my old fears, and I sat frozen.
"Is you,"
whispered Shim into the darkness,
"the creature who eats us everything?"
"I eat whatever I choose,"
the deep voice echoed, its vibrations continuing to pummel us.
"Now tell me who you are before I eat you."
Bravely, I cleared my throat.
"I am called Emrys."
"Emrys of where?"
This time my voice was weaker.
"I don't know. And I am Rhea of Druma Wood."
After a silence, the Grand Elusa boomed.
"Who else is here?"
No answer.
"Who else is here?"
So loud came the voice that flakes of dirt shook loose and fell on our heads. No answer. Only a gasping sound that I assumed was the rapid panting of the frightened little giant.
"He is Shim,"
answered Rhea.
"Also of the Druma."
She drew in a deep breath.
"Please don't eat us. We need your help."
"For what?"
"To save the Druma, my home."
I added,
"Your home as well."
For a moment, no one spoke. Then, all of a sudden, light filled the chamber. We looked at one another truly amazed, for we found ourselves in an enormous cavern cut from the rock. Although the walls around us fairly glowed, there was no clear source of the light. More mysterious yet, there was no sign at all of the Grand Elusa. But for ourselves, the radiant cavern looked empty.
"Where is she?"
I scanned the glowing cavern walls. Rhea's brow furrowed.
"I have no idea."
Shim, meanwhile, sat with his face in his hands, shivering. "And this light!" I reached a hand to the wall.
"Look! It comes from the rocks themselves."
"Crystals," said Rhea in wonderment.
"A cave of glowing crystals."
Indeed, the walls, ceiling, and floor of this cave radiated a clear, dancing light. Crystals sparkled and flashed all around us, as if the sunlight shining on a rippling river had been poured into the very earth. And I am quite sure that my own face glowed as well, for even in the days when I could see with my own eyes, when colors ran deeper and light shone brighter, I had never seen anything as beautiful as this crystal cave. Then I felt a sudden surge of warmth against my chest. Peering into the neck of my tunic, I jumped. The Galator was glowing as bright as the walls. Vibrant green light flowed from the pendant's jeweled heart. I looked up to find Rhea watching me, smiling.
"You like my cave?"
A new voice, airy and small, floated to us from one of the walls. While Shim continued to shiver with fear, Rhea and I leaned closer to the source. There, amidst a massive curl of crystals, hung a delicate web. Its strands radiated out from the center like the light from a star. Upon this web dangled a single spider, the size of a thumbnail. Its tiny head and back were covered with minuscule hairs, which glowed as white as the crystals themselves. "I like it very much," I replied.
"It reminds me of all the stars I have ever seen," said Rhea.
I watched the spider, the round hump of her back jiggling as she climbed to a higher strand.
"Are you?"
"I am,"
declared the spider.
"The Grand Elusa."
"But your voice was so much larger before." Ignoring me, the white spider hooked a silken thread to the strand. Throwing a line over a torn section of the web, she leapt down to a lower level. With a quick motion, two of her eight arms tied off the line. Having completed her repair, she scurried back to the center.
"How could you have sounded so large?"
I asked again.
"Oh, I can be large when I please."
The spider waved at Shim.
"Large enough to eat that shivering morsel over there with one bite."
The little giant, his face still in his hands, gave out a groan.
"If I am not in the mood to eat my guests,"
she continued in her airy little voice,
"I make myself smaller for a while. My stomach shrinks, even if my appetite doesn't. Anyway, image and reality are rarely the same. As you surely know by now, Emrys, that is the first rule of magic."
I caught my breath. "I know nothing about magic, except that it's dangerous, very dangerous."
"Then you do know something about magic."
"That is all I will ever know."
"Too bad. You might have found it useful in the future."
"Not me. There is no magic in my future, at least not of my own making." The spider seemed to observe me for a moment.
"If you say so."
Spying a beetle twice her size who had flown into the web, she rushed over, bit its neck, then waited for it to cease struggling. In a flash, she secured it tightly with a strand of silk. She plucked off one of its legs and started munching.
"I do enjoy eating, though. That much of the image is reality."
"Can you help us?"
pleaded Rhea.
"The Druma, it's in trouble."
The Grand Elusa pulled off another leg from the beetle.
"Of course it's in trouble, like all the rest of Finkyra. As much trouble as this poor beetle, being consumed bit by bit. Have you only just realized that?"
Rhea hung her head.
I didn't want to believe it."
"Until now, when the blight is practically at your door? You have waited too long."
"I know, but maybe there's still time. Will you help?"
The spider took another bite, chewed avidly.
"Just what do you expect me to do?"
"You could explain why it's happening."
"Why?"
More chewing.
"It would take too long to tell you everything. I will run out of food, and then I will have to eat all of you."
"Just tell me if it can be stopped. By anything."
Then Rhea added, with a glance in my direction,
"Or anyone?"
The spider reached a leg up and scratched the hump of her hairy back.
"I will tell you this. Finkyra, and that includes the Druma, is doomed unless the king you call Stangmar can be toppled."
"Toppled? Is that possible?"
"It all depends," declared the spider, "on what Stangmar calls the last treasure. Something he once had, then lost long ago."
I looked down at my tunic, under which the Galator glowed.
"Can you tell us its powers?"
The spider considered the question for a while before answering.
"The last treasure carries great powers, greater than you know."
She grabbed another leg and bit off the bottom half.
"Stangmar is convinced that when he finds it, his power will be complete."
Rhea sighed.
"He is right." "No, he is wrong. It is not his power that will be complete, but his servitude."
"Servitude?"
"To the most terrible spirit of all, the one known as Rita Gaur."
I stiffened.
"To Rita Gaur, your king is nothing but a tool for his greater goal."
She nibbled on the beetle's knee, then gave a satisfied smack of her lips.
"To dominate all of this world, the earth, and the other world. That is his true desire."
She smacked her lips again before crunching into the joint.
"His supreme adversary, Dagda, is battling him on many fronts, too many to name. Yet Rita Gaur has already won over Stangmar, and he has used the king to gain control of much of Finkyra. Few things now stand in his way, and the most important of them is..."
Another smack, another crunch.
"The last treasure. If that too falls into his hands, he will certainly win Finkyra." Then Rita Gaur will control the bridge between the Earth and the other world. He will be within reach of winning the Earth itself. Tough, but tasty. This leg, I mean. And if that ever happens, all is lost.
Frowning, I tried to understand. Doesn't the king know he's being used in this way?
He knows, but he was corrupted by Rita Gaur long ago.
She swallowed the last section of the last leg. Then she carefully wiped her mouth using the two arms nearest to her head.
Stangmar has lost the ability to choose for himself.
Yet if he could be toppled somehow, Rita Gaur might still be stopped?
Perhaps.
Rhea, looking discouraged, leaned against a wall of glowing crystals.
But how?
The Grand Elusa bit into the beetle's belly.
Tender as could be.
How? Repeated Rhea. The spider swallowed.
There is only one possibility left. No, it is not really a possibility at all.
What is it?
The king's castle must be destroyed.
Rhea blinked.
The shrouded castle? Yes, it is the creation of Rita Gaur, and through its walls the evil spirit's power flows into Stangmar and his army. The Ghulians themselves are part of the castle they guard, you know.
She took another bite of the belly.
Very good. What was I saying? Oh, yes, the Ghulians. That is why they never venture outside the castle walls. If you can destroy the castle, you can also destroy them.
It can't be done, exclaimed Rhea. The shrouded castle is always spinning, always dark. It would be impossible to attack, let alone destroy.
There is a way.
The spider, still chewing, turned toward me.
Just as there is a way for a man who is blind to see again.
I started.
How do you know that?
In the same way you can see things with your second sight that others cannot see with their eyes.
At that I faced Rhea. The writing on the walls inside Arbasa. That's why it was invisible to you.
And if you should survive,
continued the Grand Elusa,
your second sight could improve further. One day you might not only see, but understand.
You mean it could help me read the writing?
If you survive.
Really?
Do not underestimate your second sight. One day you might come to rely on it, to love it, maybe even more than you once loved your own eyes.
She paused long enough to nibble on the beetle's forehead.
Though I happen to love eyes myself.
Rhea addressed the spider.
You said there is a way?
Using three of her arms, the white creature grasped the remainder of the beetle and ate some more of the belly. She chewed slowly, savoring its flavor.
I may not have time to explain it to you. In fact, you ought to leave while you can. I will finish this morsel quite soon, and then, with my appetite, I am afraid it will be your turn next.
Again Shim groaned from behind his hands.
What is the way?
Do you know about the Cauldron of Death?
Asked the spider, cleaning one of her arms. Grimly, Rhea nodded.
Just that anyone who is thrown into it is killed instantly. True enough, but it is also true that it bears a fatal flaw. If someone were to crawl into it willingly, not by force, then the cauldron itself would be destroyed.
Crawl into it willingly? Who would ever do such a thing?
No one who wants to live to see another day.
The spider munched some more, lips smacking.
Yet, in the same manner, the castle itself has a flaw. A tiny one, perhaps, but a flaw nonetheless.
What is it?
There is an ancient prophecy as ancient as the giants themselves.
At this, Shim spread his fingers just wide enough to peek through. The spider swung to another strand, pulled free an old antenna that some victim had left behind, and gobbled it in one bite. Returning to the nearly eaten beetle, she chanted,
"Where in the darkness a castle doth spin, small will be large." ends will begin. Only when giants make dance in the hall shall every barrier crumble and fall.
What does it mean?
Demanded Rhea.
Only when giants make dance in the hall.
Shall every barrier crumble and fall? I pushed some black hairs back from my face. So the castle walls would crumble if giants ever danced there. Having finished off the beetle's belly, the spider tore off one of the wings.
So goes the prophecy.
Rhea's expression darkened.
So that's why Stangmar has been hunting down all the giants. He must have heard this prophecy, too. He's doing everything he can to make sure it never comes true.
The spider crunched on the remainder of the wing.
Including destroying Varigal, the most ancient city of all.
Oh,
moaned Shim.
I doesn't means it when I says I wishes to be big. I doesn't means it. Really, truly, honestly.
The Grand Elusa eyed the shivering mass of dirt, twigs, and honey.
I pity you, Shrunken One. For though your parents came from the giant's race, you have not learned that bigness means more than the size of your bones.
But I is happy being small. Just a foolish whim to get big. Big and dead. I is happier small but alive.
So be it,
said the spider.
Now I ought to warn all of you. This little morsel has only one wing left, and also part of the head.
She pulled off the wing, crammed it into her mouth, and chewed for a few seconds.
Now just the head. I am still very hungry, and also tired of being this size. If you do not leave my crystal cave quite soon, I will be forced to sample a few of your arms and legs.
Rhea clutched my arm.
She's right. Let's get out of here.
But how?
I am not certain,
the spider answered,
but I think you might be able to climb out on the crystals.
Of course, exclaimed Rhea. Let's go.
She began to scamper up the radiant wall, using the larger crystals as holds for her hands and feet. Shim pushed past her, scaling the steep wall as rapidly as his stubby arms and legs could manage. He left behind a trail of gooey syrup on the crystals. Seeing me standing beneath her, Rhea called down,
"Quick, or you'll follow that beetle."
I hesitated, driven to ask the Grand Elusa one thing more.
"Come on!"
"Go ahead," I called back. "I'll be there right away."
"You had better do just that."
The spider reached for the beetle's head, leaving nothing but an empty noose of silk.
"On the other hand, you do look scrawny, but edible."
"Please tell me one last thing," I begged. "About my home, my true home. Can you tell me where it is? The Galator glowing right here is my only clue."
"Ah, the Galator. Come closer and show it to me."
"I don't dare. You might..."
"My, but you do look more meaty than I thought."
"Please," I cried. "Then can you tell me how to find my mother, my father, my true name?"
Swallowing the very last of the beetle, the spider answered,
"I cannot say. That is for..." "I dare say. You do smell unusually interesting. Come closer, boy. Come closer, yes.
Let me take a closer look."
As the spider's voice swelled in size, so did the spider. But I did not stay to watch the change. I scurried out of the cave with all the speed I could muster. Chapter 22 Encounter in the Mist. I emerged from the cave into the swirling mist. I could barely make out Rhea, even though she was only a few paces away. Beside her stood Shim, so covered with sticks and dirt and leaves that he looked more like a miniature mountain than a miniature person. Glancing down at the Galator, I noticed that it no longer glowed. Rhea sat in a small grove of elms, where 5 young saplings had sprouted around an elder. She watched me exit the cave, clearly relieved. Then she leaned close to the old elm tree in the center of the grove. She began talking with it, whispering in low, swishing tones. In response, the tree rocked slowly on its roots, creaking with a voice that seemed terribly sad. In time, Rhea turned to me, her eyes clouded.
"This tree has seen more than 200 springs in Druma Wood, yet now it's sure it has seen its very last. It weeps every day for the future of its children. I told it not to lose hope, but it said it has only one hope left, to live long enough to do at least some small thing to keep the Druma safe from warrior goblins. But it expects just to die of grief instead."
Shim, standing beside her, rubbed his dirt-caked nose and looked down. I could only nod sadly and watch the streaming mist. All at once, I picked up the sweet scent of apple blossoms.
"You seem so very glum,"
said a familiar voice.
"Kuwain!" Rhea leapt to her feet. "Whatever brings you here? You almost never go out walking anymore."
Passing a branched hand before her face, Kuwain emerged from the mist.
"I shouldn't have followed you,"
she hesitated, a touch of fear in her teardrop eyes.
"Is it possible you can still forgive me?"
Rhea's eyes narrowed.
"You have done something terrible."
At that instant, 6 huge warrior goblins stepped out of the mist. Swiftly they surrounded us. Their thin eyes glinted beneath pointed helmets. Their muscular arms protruded from shoulder plates. Their 3-fingered hands grasped the hilts of broadswords. Beads of perspiration gathered on their gray-green skin. One of them, wearing red armbands above his elbows, brandished his sword at Kuwain. In a wheezing, rasping voice, he demanded,
"Which one has it?"
Kuwain glanced furtively at Rhea, who was glaring at her in astonishment.
"They promised me I could use the Galator to make myself young again."
She waved her shriveled fingers.
"Don't you see? My hands will wither no more."
Rhea winced with pain.
"I can't believe you would do this after all the years."
"Which one?"
rasped the goblin. Kuwain pointed a knobby finger at me. The warrior goblin stepped into the grove of elms and aimed his sword at my chest.
"Give it to me now, or shall I make it very painful for you first?"
"Remember what you said,"
urged Kuwain.
"You promised not to harm them."
The goblin wheeled around to face the aging treeling. A thin smile curled his crooked mouth.
"I forgot, but did I make any promise about you?"
Kuwain's eyes widened in fright. She started to back away.
"No!"
cried Rhea. It was too late. The goblin's sword whizzed through the air, slicing off one of Kuwain's arms. She shrieked, grasping the open wound as brown blood gushed from it.
"There!"
The goblin's wheezing laughter filled the air.
"Now you won't have to worry about that old hand anymore."
He advanced at Kuwain.
"Now let's do the other one."
Screaming in terror, blood pouring from her stunted arm, Kuwain stumbled off into the mist.
"Let her go,"
rasped the goblin.
"We have more important work to do."
He jabbed his sword, dripping with brown blood, at my throat.
"Now, where were we?"
I swallowed. "If you kill me, you'll never know how it works." A sinister look filled the goblin's face.
Now that you remind me, my master did tell me to keep alive the person who wears it, but he said nothing about keeping your friends alive.
I sucked in my breath.
Perhaps if I agree to spare your friends, though, you will tell me how it works.
He winked at another goblin.
Then my dear master and I will have some bargaining to do.
He pivoted to Shim, who was shaking in fear, and kicked him so hard he flew across the grove.
Shall I start our fun with this dirty little dwarf? No, I think not.
He turned to Rhea, his thin eyes gleaming.
A girl in the forest. What an unexpected pleasure.
Rhea stepped backward. The goblin nodded, and two members of his band lunged at her. Each of them seized one of her leaf-draped arms.
Give it to me,
ordered the goblin. I glanced at Rhea, then back at him. How could I possibly give up the Galator?
Right now.
I did not move.
All right, then. We'll amuse ourselves while you make up your mind.
He flicked his wrist at Rhea.
To start with, break both of her arms.
Instantly, the goblins wrenched Rhea's arms behind her back. At the same time, she cried out,
Don't do it, Emrys, don't!
She shrieked with pain.
No,
I pleaded. I pulled the Galator out of my tunic. The jewels glinted darkly in the mist.
Spare her!
The goblin smiled savagely.
Give it to me first.
Rhea's captors twisted her arms harder, almost lifting her off the ground. She shrieked again. I removed the cord from my neck. The grove was silent except for the sad creaking of the old elm. I hefted the precious pendant, then handed it over. The goblin snatched it from me. As he gazed into the jeweled object, he wheezed excitedly. Meanwhile, his greenish tongue danced around his lips, then he smirked at me.
I have changed my mind. First I will kill your friends, and then I will ask you how it works.
No!
All the goblins wheezed in laughter. Their immense chests shook at their leader's joke, while Rhea winced painfully.
All right,
rasped the goblin.
Maybe I will be merciful. Show me how it works. Now.
I hesitated, not knowing what to do. If ever there was a moment to break my vow and call upon my powers, this was it. Did I dare? Yet even as I asked myself the question, my mind filled with surging, searing flames, the screams of Denatius, the smell of my own burning flesh.
Try, you coward,
a voice within me cried. You must try. Yet just as urgently, another voice answered,
Never again. Last time you destroyed your eyes, this time you will destroy your very soul. Never again.
Show me,
commanded the goblin. Even through the thickening mist, I saw his muscles tighten. Raising his sword, he aimed the blade at Rhea's neck. Still, I hesitated. Just then, a strange wind, wilder by the second, shook the branches of the old elm in the center of the grove. Its creaking rose to a scream. As the goblin looked up, the tree snapped free of its roots and toppled over. He had only enough time to howl in agony as the tree crashed down on top of him. I reached for the Galator, which had dropped to the ground. I slung the leather cord over my neck. With my other hand, I grabbed the fallen goblin's sword and started slashing at another member of the band. The goblin, far stronger than I, quickly backed me against the trunk of the downed tree. The goblin reared back to strike me down. Suddenly he froze. A look of sheer horror came over his face, horror that I had seen only once before, in Denatius when the flames swallowed him. I whirled around. Then I, too, froze. The sword fell from my hand, for out of the swirling mist came a gargantuan white spider, her jaws slavering.
Hungry!
Bellowed the great spider in a blood-curdling voice.
I am hungry.
Before I knew what was happening, Rhea grabbed me by the wrist and pulled me out of the path of the Grand Elusa. To the shrieks of the cornered goblin, we ran down the hill, closely pursued by Shim. The little giant sprinted almost as fast as we did ourselves, his feet kicking up a cloud of dirt and leaves. Two of the warrior goblins dodged the monster, leaving their companions to fend for themselves, and chased after us. Wheezing and cursing, waving their swords in the air, they pursued us through the mist-shrouded boulders. Though we charged with all our speed down the hillside, they gained on us steadily. Soon they were almost on top of Shim. Suddenly a river appeared out of the mist. Rhea cried out, "The water! Jump in the water!" With no time to ask questions, Shim and I obeyed. We hurled ourselves into the fast-flowing water. The goblins plunged in after us, thrashing their swords in the current.
"Help us!"
Rhea shouted, although I had no idea to whom. Then she slapped her hands wildly against the water's surface. At once, a wave began to crest in the middle of the river. A great glistening arm of water rose up, bearing Rhea, Shim, and myself in the palm of its hand. The liquid fingers curled over us like a waterfall as the hand lifted us high above the river's cascading surface. Spray, sparkling with rainbows, surrounded us. The arm of water whisked us downstream, leaving our pursuers far behind. Minutes later, the arm melted back into the river itself, dumping us on a sandbar. We climbed out of the water, bedraggled but safe. And, in the case of Shim, considerably cleaner as well. Chapter 23. Great Losses. Rhea collapsed on the bank, her garb of leaves wet and glistening in the sun. As the surface of the river returned to normal, a thin finger of water splashed across her hand. It clung there for an instant before dissolving into the sand. But she did not seem to notice. Morosely, she kicked at the emerald reeds by the river's edge. I sat down beside her.
"Thank you for saving us."
"Thank the river, not me. The river Unceasing is one of my oldest friends in the forest. He bathed me as an infant, watered me as a child. Now he has saved us all."
I glanced at the waterway, then at Shim, who had flopped down on his back in the sun. For the first time, no dirt and honey covered his clothing, and I noticed that his baggy shirt was woven of some sort of yellowish bark. Suddenly, I remembered the yellow-rimmed eye of trouble. Had the brave hawk eluded that swarm of bees? If he had not, had he survived their wrath? And if he had, would he ever be able to find me again? My shoulder felt strangely bereft without him sitting there. I turned back to Rhea, who looked more glum than I.
"You don't seem very glad."
"How can I be glad? I lost two friends today, one old, one new."
Her eyes wandered across my face.
"Kuwain, I've known ever since she found me abandoned so long ago. The old elm I met only a few minutes before she felled herself to spare us harm. They couldn't be more different, one crooked and bent, the other straight and tall. One stole my loyalty, the other gave me life, but I grieve for both."
I heaved a sigh.
"That elm won't see its saplings ever again."
She lifted her chin a bit.
"Arbasa wouldn't agree. Arbasa would say they'll meet again in the other world, that we all will someday. Do you really believe that?"
She drew a deep breath.
"I'm not sure. I know I want to believe it, but whether we really will meet after the long journey, I don't know."
"What long journey?"
"It's the voyage to the other world, after a Finkiren dies. Arbasa says the more a person needs to learn when she dies, then the longer her long journey must be."
"In that case, even if the other world is real, it would take me forever to get there."
"Maybe not."
She glanced at the rushing river, then back at me.
"Arbasa also told me that sometimes the bravest and truest souls are spared the long journey completely. Their sacrifice is so great that they are brought right to the other world at the very instant of death."
I scoffed at this.
"So, instead of dying, they just disappear? One second they're here, writhing in pain, and the next second they're in the other world, dancing merrily? I don't think so.
Rhea lowered her head.
It does sound hard to believe.
It's impossible, especially if they're not capable of such sacrifice anyway.
What do you mean by that?
If they're too cowardly.
I bit my lip.
Rhea, I could have done more, much more, to help you.
She looked at me sympathetically.
What more could you have done? I have some, well, powers. Nothing to do with the Galator. I don't begin to understand them, except that they are strong, too strong.
Powers like your second sight?
Yes, but stronger, fiercer, wilder.
For a moment, I listened to the churning water of the river unceasing.
I never asked for such powers. They just came to me. Once, in a rage, I used them badly, and they cost me my eyes. They cost another boy much more. They weren't meant for mortals, these powers. I promised never to use them again.
Who did you promise?
God, the great healer of Bronwyn's prayers. I promised that if only I might somehow see again, I would give up my powers forever. And God heard my plea. But still, I should have used them back there to save you, promise or no promise.
She peered at me through her tangle of curls.
Something tells me that this promise isn't the only reason you didn't want to use your powers.
My mouth went dry.
The truth is, I fear them. With all my heart, I fear them.
I pulled a reed out of the shallow water and twisted it roughly with my fingers.
Bronwyn once told me that God gave me those powers to use if I could only learn to master them. To use them well, she said, with wisdom and love. But how can you use wisely something that you fear to touch? How can you use lovingly something that could destroy your eyes, your life, your very soul? It's impossible.
She waited quite a while before responding. Then she waved toward the white-capped waters.
The river unceasing appears to be just a line of water flowing from here to there. Yet he is more, much more. He is all that he is, including whatever hides beneath the surface.
What does that have to do with me?
Everything. I think Bronwyn was right. If someone, God, Dagda, or whoever, gave you special powers, they are for you to use. Just as the river unceasing has its own powers to use, you are all that you are.
I shook my head.
So I should ignore my promise?
Don't ignore it. But ask yourself if that is really what this God wanted you to do.
He gave me back my sight.
He gave you back your powers.
That's insane, I exclaimed. You have no idea.
A loud snort from somewhere nearby cut me off. I jumped, thinking it came from a wild boar. Then came the snort again, and I realized that it was not a boar after all. It was Shim. He had fallen asleep on the sandbar. Rhea watched the tiny figure.
He snores loud enough to be a true giant.
At least with him, you can see what he really is with just one look. With me, it's not so simple.
She turned back to me.
You worry about who you are too much. Just be yourself, and you'll find out eventually.
Eventually?
I stood angrily.
Don't try to tell me about my life. Stick to your own life, if you please.
She stood to face me.
It might help you to think about somebody's life besides your own. I've never met anybody more wrapped up in himself. You're the most selfish person I've ever met, even if you are...
She stopped herself.
Forget it. Just go away and worry about yourself some more. I think I'll do just that.
I stomped off into the thick forest by the river unceasing. Too angry to watch where I was going, I crashed through the underbrush, bruising my shins and scraping my thighs. This made me all the angrier, and I cursed loudly. Finally, I sat down on a rotting trunk that was already mostly a mound of soil. Suddenly, I heard a gruff voice shout,
"Get him!"
Two warrior goblins, the same ones we had eluded upstream, jumped from the underbrush and threw me to the ground. One of them pointed a sword at my chest. The other produced a large sack made of roughly stitched brown cloth.
"None of your tricks this time," growled the goblin with the sword. He beckoned to the other with a burly, gray-green hand. "Get him in the sack."
At that instant, a piercing whistle shot from the sky. The goblin with the sword cried out and fell back, his arm bleeding from the gouges of talons.
"Trouble!"
I rolled out of the fray and jumped to my feet. The Merlin, talons slashing and wings flapping in the face of the goblin, drove him back several paces. Every time the goblin slashed with his sword, trouble dived into his face, ripping at the eyes beneath the pointed helmet. Despite the huge size advantage of the goblin, the small hawk's ferocity was proving too much. But trouble did not count on the other goblin joining the battle. Before I could shout any warning, the second warrior whipped his powerful hand through the air. He caught the hawk in mid-dive. Trouble slammed into the trunk of a tree and fell stunned to the ground. He lay there utterly still, his wings spread wide. The last thing I saw was the first goblin raising his sword to chop the Merlin into pieces. Then something smashed me on the head, and day turned into night. Chapter 24. The Switch. Conscious again, I sat bolt upright. Though my head still swam, I could make out the massive boughs of trees all around me. I inhaled the rich, moist air. I listened to the quiet whispering of the branches, which sounded strangely somber, and I knew that I must still be in Druma Wood. No sign anywhere of the goblins, or of trouble. Was it all a bad dream? Then why did my head hurt so much?
"You is awake, I sees."
Startled, I turned.
"Shim, what happened?"
The little giant examined me warily.
"You is never very nicely to me. Is you going to hurt me if I tells you?"
"No, no, you can be sure of that. I won't hurt you. Just tell me what happened." Still reticent, Shim rubbed his pear-shaped nose thoughtfully. "I won't hurt you. Certainly, definitely, absolutely."
"All right."
Keeping his distance, he paced back and forth on the mossy soil.
"The girl? The nicely one? She hears you fightsing. She is upset. The goblins has captured you. She wants to find you, but I tell her this is madness. I do try. I do try."
At this point, he sniffed. His eyes, more pink than usual, squinted at me. A tear rolled down his cheek, making a wide curve around his nose.
"But she does not listen to Shim. I comes with her, but I is scared. Very, very, very scared. We comes through the woods and finds the place where you fights the goblinses."
I grabbed him by the arm. Small though it was, it felt as muscled as a sailor's.
"Did you see a hawk, a little one?"
The little giant pulled away.
"She finds some feathers, all bloody, by a tree, but no hawk. She is sad. Shim can tell. This hawk, he is your friend?"
Friend. The word surprised me as much as it saddened me. Yes, the bird I would have given anything to lose just a day ago had, indeed, become my friend. Just in time to leave me. Once again, I knew the pain of losing what I had only just found.
"You is sad, too."
"Yes," I said quietly.
"Then you is not going to like the rest. It is a nicely, not at all."
"Tell me." Shim stepped over to a hefty hemlock root and sat down dejectedly.
"She follows your trail. Shim comes too, but I is more and more scared. We finds the place where goblins is camp. They is fightsing, pushing and shouting. Then she makes the switch."
I gasped. "The switch?" Another tear rolled down his cheek, rounding the edge of his nose.
"I tells her not to do it. I tells her. But she shushes me quietly and sneaks up to the sack holding you. She unties it, pulls you out, over to these bushes. She tries, we both tries to wakens you, but you is like dead. So she climbs into the sack herself. I tries to stop her, but she says...
What? Tell me.
She says that she must do it, for you is the Druma's only hope.
My heart turned into lead.
Then the goblins has stopped fighting. Without looking into the sack, they carries her off.
No. No, she shouldn't have done that.
Shim cringed.
I knows you is not going to like it.
As soon as they find her, they'll... Oh, it's too horrible.
It is horrible, it is.